It's the download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 9 o'clock, we're going to talk with Sarah Gruenberg, chef over at Monteverde on Madison Street. It's really one of the best new restaurants Chicago has going right now in 2016. She was the executive chef at Spiaggia, and she did Top Chef. She was a runner-up, and now she's got her own restaurant. So we'll talk to her about that journey coming up. And at 10 o'clock, Character Flaws. It's our Wednesday night special, where we take the best of sketch, improv, performance, bring it to the radio. Jimmy Corain is on tonight. That'll be fun. And we're going to do our classic bit, Nightwind, because what's better than getting love advice from a light rock DJ? And that's kind of a Chicago tradition, right?
Work for me.
All right. Pubs and taverns have always been the place to get good political conversation. It's kind of a no-brainer to take that conversation, add in some of the actual politicians and professional observers, and put it on stage in the back. That's the idea between First Tuesdays with Mick and Ben, which is a political talk show on stage the first Tuesday of every month at the Hideout in Chicago. The next one will be Tuesday, February 2nd, and it features State Representative LaShawn Ford and Chicago Alderman Roderick Sawyer. Mick Dumpke is an investigative reporter for the Sun-Times. Ben Jarofsky, columnist for the Chicago Reader. Both of them in studio tonight with me at the big table. Gentlemen, good to see you.
Thank Likewise, you. Justin.
So let's talk about this. I mean, when did you guys come up with the idea? Mick, you and I talked a little bit about this show, so maybe I'll throw it to Ben. You know, where'd you come up with the idea to do a political talk show, which is really just a conversation in the back?
When was it? It was like 3 years ago or something. We've been doing the show since...
The years all start to bleed together after a while.
I believe Rom was the mayor. It was after
which
Daly.
I wish Daly was the mayor.
Tim, who runs the Hideout, suggested...
Tim Tutton.
Tim Tutton, T-squared, as we so finally call him, suggested that we do this show. And so that our first show, I think, was April 2014. It took like 3 months for us to get it together. So we've been we're heading into our second year. It's been pretty good.
We get some... You guys have been nice guests on talk shows.
We're almost finishing our second year, Ben. We're going to be soon heading our third.
Just kind of got
year.
An Abbott and Costello thing kind of going.
Yeah,
on.
Exactly.
He usually corrects me.
I edited Ben for years. Yeah. Yeah. So I can't resist, but apparently to edit him while we're talking here. Sorry.
Corrected many of my misspellings.
What do you guys consider the strength of the show? Is it your chemistry? I mean, the two of you on stage, or is it the guests? What is it about the first Tuesday at Mick and Ben that you think works?
Well, you can see there's a long list.
Wait, that implies that something is working.
I would like to think that... we talk about serious issues, but in a fairly informal setting, in an informal way. So we try to get people loose. Ben and I are usually at least nursing a beer up there. We encourage our guests to do the same. Yeah. And just to kind of, you know, have a free-flowing conversation. So we tell everybody, of course, this is all on the record. There are actually human beings here listening to you. We tape it. But we also want them to go beyond the talking points they're used to giving in interviews and actually tell us what's really going on.
Do they? I mean, do the politicians you've had Karen Lewis and you've had all sorts of people down the line, do they buy into the idea that this is more than just sort of like the next stop on their political talk show circuit?
Yeah, I like to think they do. I think there's something about Mick was getting at, the element of the environment and loosens people up. Some people stick to their talking points. We had Steve Brown on, who is Mike Madigan's press secretary. He's been his press secretary for years, and he was very good at sticking to his talking points. We couldn't wedge him from them over an hour.
So he gets paid to do.
Yeah, even when he was talking about his love of the St. Louis Cardinals, he was still on his talking points. He was at least fun about it, right?
But yeah, he had a good sense of humor about it.
Because it ended up being 3-1. We had Natasha Karecki,
right.
Reporter, columnist for Politico.
Hey, what is this? Am I the only guy? But sometimes, like Karen Lewis has been our guest twice, and she's great. She just really loosens up and goes after people. Who else have written?
I think Karen Lewis referred to Governor Rauner as a sociopath on our show before she said that to someone else. So in some cases, I guess I was going to say, in some cases, they test out their talking.
Are there some legalization
of marijuana? So, you know.
I mean, you guys have obviously... going after the big names to be on your show. Are there some that just have ignored you or said, absolutely no way in hell am I going to be on with Mick and Ben?
Well, we're still waiting for the mayor to respond to our open invitation to come on the show. So if he or his staff people are listening to this, and I'm sure they are, Justin,
yeah,
as
they
we
do.
Know
it's
that they're
appointment listening.
This.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're, you know, we still would like to have the mayor on our show. We're not going to drop other guests. We already have arranged yeah. for the mayor, to be clear.
No, one time we had this guy, I remember this, I'll leave his name out. He had a few to drink, so we were after the show. It's like the after party, you know, that's where all the good stuff happens. And so he was like, you know, I could get the mayor here, but you got to be really loose about it. You know, you got to just, like, hold it open. And I'm like, no, I'm not holding it open,
yeah,
dude,
that never
for
works,
the mayor
man.
If he wants
yeah.
to come in like anybody else. And, you know, when
we're
you
also
say,
not going to give him, like, a 10-minute segment. If he wants to come on, yeah, it's an hour yeah. show. He's going to be up there for an hour like everybody
he's
else.
He's never going to do it. Let's just, like, but, you know, he's just not going to do it. So let's just, like, pretend that he is, that he's thinking about it. But, you know, it's not just, quote, unquote, big names. I find, like, some of our best shows have been aldermen that we all know, anybody who's into politics knows, but maybe they're not known throughout mm-hmm. the world. Like, we had the... one time we had Danny Solis and Rick Munoz, which two aldermen from the Southwest side.
Whose families actually are from the same part of Mexico but
right.
through their entire political careers, they've basically been rivals where, you know, Danny has been a real insider, mm-hmm. you know, first to the previous mayor, now to this mayor. And Rick has, you know, most of the time sort of put himself as part of the progressive opposition. So to have them up there sort of going back and forth a little bit about their different takes it ended up being a great conversation.
Great. I mean, it's a great thing. I mean, that to have real political conversations mm-hmm. in a city that just loves politics, yeah. it's a great thing. Who would be the one guest you'd want to have on? And Ben, you better say Mayor Daley. You better say Mayor
Daley.
You better.
No, I think Mayor. I would Mayor Daley on that show, and I would be discussing TIFs and the like issues that are 5 or 4 years old, like they failed Olympics. I'd like to have. Well, this is kind of wonky, but I'd like to have. Would love to have like Karen Lewis up there with Arne Duncan.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would be a good debate on where we're going in education. I'm sort of a school guy. That's my big issue that drives me. So that's a realistic show that may possibly happen someday, perhaps, because Arne Duncan's back in town, if both parties would be interested. I would like something like that. What about you, Mick?
Chapo Guzman, okay. when he's extradited to Chicago to stand
yeah.
trial
I'm sure there
for trafficking drugs.
Be, yeah,
we'll make a little arrangement.
Yeah,
we got
him
we got ties.
It's
yeah.
closed circuit, man. It's closed circuit. It'll all work out. Mick Dumpke and Ben Jarofsky, the two behind First Tuesdays with Mick and Ben, which is a show every first Tuesday of the month. This one's going to be on February 2nd at the Hideout, 1354 West Waubonsia. When we come back, I've kind of been touting this as sort of the real state of the state. Let's talk about some of the stuff that happened today in Springfield, and also talk about schools and police and Rahm Emanuel. There's a lot to talk about, so let's get to the break. It's a download on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guests at the big table tonight, Mick Dumpke and Ben Jarofsky. Ben, a columnist for The Reader. Mick, an investigative reporter with the Sun-Times. I got a show at the Hideout the first Tuesday with Mick and Ben. It's this Tuesday, February 2nd. And let's, you know, today the state of the state. Let's get your opinion. What did you think of the performance today?
Well, I actually watched it. Which is amazing.
You won't get that time back.
Yeah, I lost. That was at 40 minutes. I don't know. I found it depressing, and I found it kind of absurd on one level. The only funny element, I suppose, was watching. I don't know if you saw it. You had to see this to really understand it. But Rauner's speaking at the mic, and behind him on the riser, so to speak, are the Senate President Cullerton and House Speaker Madigan, with whom he's supposed to be negotiating, but of course he's not, so there's no budget, and you know they're having to lay off social service workers throughout the state, and the aged, the infirmed can't get basic services. It's like a retreat of civilization, and so the only funny thing was sort of like watching Madigan and Cullerton sort of chit chat from time to time and roll their eyes in disbelief or laugh at the various state reps who were clapping when Rauner would say, you know, whatever talking point. So, I found it, I mean, I, you know, it's like a wasted year, Nothing happened in terms of.
It's amazing to think that it's been. I mean,
a full year.
I mean, and we had Senator Raul on. He was talking about this criminal justice bill and reform. And I'm like, is that the only thing? Like body cameras that got through Springfield this year. It didn't seem like anything happened. I mean, budget held it all up.
Yeah.
What'd you think, Mick? What'd you think of just the overall tenor today?
Well, I thought it was like warmed over oatmeal from yesterday's breakfast. I mean, you know, the governor had and his people had, you know, quote unquote, leaked part of his message ahead of time. And the Sun-Times and other papers, you know, were writing about how he was going to make this big bipartisan pitch, this pitch for working together. But it was the same message he's had all along. I mean, if you like the governor, you give him credit for consistency. But, you know, it's a bunch of malarkey that it was bipartisanship. It was his same old turnaround agenda kind of repackaged all over again, right? I mean, was there anything different? One thing I thought was humorous is a neighbor of mine called me this afternoon and after the speech and said, I heard the governor talking a lot about raising taxes. And he said, well, why not a tax on grapes, too? You know, I mean, the governor, which is a lame joke, except that it's not quite as lame as the governor, like pronouncing working and raising the way he does. It's just so phony. It's just like, who is this guy? What is he really going for? So I just, Justin, thought it was the same thing all over again.
You guys have been political reporters and columnists in Chicago for a long time. You've seen, I mean, you both were really critical of Pat Quinn and Blagojevich before that, the one-party rule. So, I mean, where are we? I mean, is this a better government than we had, say, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when Pat Quinn was up on stage going, we're going to have to raise the income tax? I mean, where are we? I can't get a grasp of if it's working.
Well, it's clearly not working in the sense of providing basic service for people who are most vulnerable. I mean, and so in that way, we're not better. The best argument you can make, which is not an argument I would make, is that, God, I feel bizarre even trying to make this argument. I don't even know why I'm going to make this argument. But the notion is that if you start from the assumption that all the ills in Illinois stem from the fact that workers have collective bargaining rights,
right,
and that if we eradicate those rights once and for all, then all will be good in the state, then this is a holy mission that Governor Rauner is on, and he should not back down, even if every last elderly person has been kicked out of every single nursing home in the state of Illinois. Since I don't subscribe to that notion, and I would think that many of the Republicans who are voting with him don't subscribe to that notion, but they're too afraid to break from him because he now controls the Republican Party in this state. If you don't subscribe to the notion, then I think it's clear that our state has regressed.
What do you think, Mick? I'm amazed at I mean, the LSSI stuff, you know, really threw me for a loop, just the idea of that would be shuttered, or that would be what they're now calling restructured.
Lutheran service.
Just because, you know, there's no budget. And you know, a texter, you know, text in just in the last hour saying, isn't it against the law? Doesn't the Constitution say you have to have a budget? And it just seems like nobody even cares about the rules. And I hate to sound like Lebowski, but it's like, am I the only one who cares about the rules? Like, what's happening here?
What do you think about the Eagles, Justin?
Yeah,
I think you're right. I mean, first of all, a large portion of the state is being funded by court order. So basically, the courts have taken over some of the administrative functions of the state. That's where we are. And so the people who are hurting the most from all of this are the people who are sort of least visible to the powers that be. And, you know, one of the interesting things, of course, the governor made a pitch for criminal justice reform, which is a bipartisan issue in this state as well as around the country. And, you know, I'm tempted to applaud him for that, except, you know, as I and other people have written about, some of the people who need help, the people coming out of prison, for instance, you know, all those resources are being dried up through all this, too.
The Lutheran Family Services, that was a big reentry, was a big program. Yeah.
Exactly.
And they're just not funded.
Substance abuse counseling, you know, anger management, all sorts of job training programs for the vulnerable, including people who are trying to stay straight. So, no, it's a slow moving catastrophe on that level. But Ben's right. You know, the governor and true believers say, well, what we needed to do was to send a message that the old way of doing business is over and this is the way they're doing it.
Now, is it safe? And I always have a problem with this, but is it safe to just, I mean, what they're really saying when they say the word competitive and when they say restructuring is to get rid of collective bargaining. So like corporate America, they can say someone who's making, I don't know, $65,000 a year, now you're making 35. Deal with it. Is that really what this is about? Like they're going to save money by taking away the union right to make a livable wage?
Well, that's what I presume this is, right? I mean, I don't know how else it would translate. I mean, the governor today in his speech, I mean, some of the things he says are so fantastical. So, and I'm hard on Rahm. I mean, I spend most of my time ripping Rahm. And so every now and then I have to look at Governor Rahm.
Take a break from Rahm.
It makes me appreciate Rahm more. I don't think Rahm has ever said anything quite like this. Well, yes, he has. As soon as I said that out of my mouth, I realized he does it all the time. But Rahm was arguing that if we take away collective bargaining rights of teachers, for instance, that will give the boards of education throughout the state the freedom and liberty to get their budgets in order and give teacher raises. And that's such a preposterous notion right there. I mean, the idea that if the teachers
they
give up their leverage
that.
Yeah, right. That they hold
the board's
going to
be
board,
like, you guys are great.
You're great.
You
here,
20%.
Take some more money. Yeah. Would you please? So it's just a ludicrous point. And
that's why unions are there in the first place.
Yes. Right?
Well, they're also claiming that basically by making the state, quote unquote, more competitive, that more, as he calls them, job creators, more employers will come in here. They'll create more jobs. Everyone will have more money to spend. That will improve the tax base of local communities and allow them to hire more teachers, presumably at a higher wage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's Reaganomics all over again. It's a different version of Reaganomics.
Mick Dumke, Ben Jarofsky, my guests tonight, their show, the first Tuesdays with Mick and Ben. It's the first Tuesdays of every month at the Hideout. Their next one is February 2nd. Mick Dumke with the Sun-Times, Ben Jarofsky with the Reader. Let's take a break for the news when we come back. Favorite topic, Rahm?
Yeah,
we'll do
of
Rahm?
Course.
We'll do Rahm.
We can't leave him out.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Patty Vasquez is on at 11. She's still in Springfield, Pete? I think she is, yeah. She went down to Springfield as State of the State, so she'll have her show live from Springfield at 11 o'clock. Right now, we are joined by Ben Jarofsky and Mick Dumke. The show, First Tuesdays with Mick and Ben, is a political talk show on stage every first Tuesday of every month at the Hideout in Chicago. There's one coming up here Tuesday, February 2nd. Ben is a columnist at The Reader. Mick, a investigative reporter with the Sun-Times. They're in studio with me at the big table tonight. Let's talk Rahm. I'm fascinated by, Mick, you know, actually, Ben, the column you did, which one of the best columns in the history of Chicago media, where you went down to the South Shore Cultural Center talked to Daley.
Oh, okay.
You know, like that, because you were kind of known as his thorn in his side, like you were just, both of you. I mean, Mick, the gun up the butt, that was you. You guys are just you guys are like known as Chicago's sort of thorn in the political side. Is it the same with Rahm Emanuel? I mean, does Rahm Emanuel recognize you guys and just like, oh, I hate when you guys are here. I hate when you know, like what's your relationship like with Rahm Emanuel and the administration?
Well, I have no relationship with Rahm Emanuel or pretty much anybody in his administration, and I haven't seen Rahm Emanuel since 2002, I want to say.
Really?
He was running for Congress at the time,
right.
And I did a profile of him. And I've had maybe one brief interview with him when he was first running for mayor, which I wrote about. It's actually pretty funny, the whole thing. I won't go into it.
You should tell that story very quickly.
Well, all right. All right. Very quickly.
Always the editor, Mike.
Yeah.
I love it.
Always the editor. But put that in, would you?
Put it in.
Sometimes I read it and go, wait a minute, put it in. He didn't even tell me. At the time, the issue I was addressing was whether we need a tough man to be the mayor. You know, that was sort of like Chicago is so wild. We need someone who could just knock us around a little bit and tell us to shut up and that kind of thing. So I was contrasting Rahm Emanuel to Miguel Devalle, who was running against him, who's a very nice man. If you ever met him, if you're on your show, you would know. Yeah. And so at the time, Rahm was known for having a quote along the lines of he was talking to one of his aides at the White House, and he had said to the aide, I believe it was, take the tampon out and man it up. And Carol Moseley Braun, this is like great moments in Chicago politics, at a debate, a mayoral debate, had said, raised that quote to Rahm, and in the debate and said, that was disrespectful to women. And so what do you say about it? And Rahm, foolishly, this is an impulse I've noticed, he does a lot. His first instinct is to deny something that everybody knows is true. Like, for instance, he said he didn't see the Laquan McDonald right. tape. Of course, everybody knows he saw it immediately. Right. And so he said, no, I didn't say that. So they called me, and they told me I was going to get 5 minutes with Rahm. They go, what questions are you going to ask? So not only are they limiting me to 5 minutes, but they want to know what questions. And so I said, well, the first question I want to ask him is whether or not he did, in fact, say, to take the tampon out and man it up. And they go, you cannot ask that question. They're like telling me I can't ask the question. So, of course, I want to ask the question. And in fact, I unfortunately did not get an opportunity to ask the question because he hung up on me in the conversation. He got so mad at me. So it's been all downhill ever since, Justin.
Nick, what's your relationship like with the Emanuel administration?
Well, it's not much different with Rahm himself than Ben's is. I don't go to a lot of press conferences, so I don't have a lot of personal interaction with him, although I was told by one of his aides one time that he demanded to know who that guy was after I did ask him a question, which was apparently off the script at one point. That was early on. But my main relationship now is through his various spokespeople and his FOIA officers, who, of course, all love me because I send in FOIAs all the time.
This is the Freedom of Information Act.
Freedom of Information
the new tool
Act.
For, so, reporters to be able to get at information that's that they're trying to hide.
Right. And it's supposed to be
textbook.
Yeah, it's supposed to be actually the whole public. Anybody can send in a FOIA, actually, but reporters use it a lot. And we try to use it as leverage, even when we don't get the information we need. Sometimes you write about what you don't get and how they're handling your FOIAs and all that. So, my relationship with them, Justin, is such that several of the FOIAs that I've issued since the Laquan McDonald video was released were either denied or delayed, and then the information was subsequently given to someone else in other media.
Yeah. I've heard this a lot about how this administration specifically likes to pit journalists against each other. They have favorites, or they say, we're going to give it to him, almost in a way to make the other journalist angry or what have you. What do you think of the way that politicians pit journalists against each other?
Well, I think, first of all, I admit that it's not the politician's responsibility to make sure we're covering all of the news we should cover. That's our job, not theirs. But no, they don't play fair. And in this instance, I actually think there are two layers to this. First of all, it's state law that you're supposed to respond to FOIA requests and provide these records. So, you know, they're actually ignoring, in a lot of instances, they're actually defying the law. Okay. I know that's a finer point around here.
But
the other thing is, in an instance, in an environment like this where you have Rahm bending over backwards, making apologies on every corner, going on forgiveness tours, taking pictures with people at soul food restaurants and at police stations. Yeah. And promising to improve transparency. And then meanwhile, he's quietly like basically having his people screw over one media person today, you know, and helping somebody else out and then doing the reverse thing tomorrow. He's just playing games.
Well, one thing that came out this week that was interesting was, I guess it was last week, was the text messages. Mm-hmm. There was a story that came out about, I think the Tribune got the text messages. They put the PDF up. You got to see the text around Laquan McDonald and subsequent after, with the shooting around Christmas time. It's amazing because, you know, again, like you just said about Rahm Emanuel, his first thing is tonight. He said right away after Laquan, I don't text.
Yeah.
I don't text. And then you see all
And
texts.
As a matter of fact, I have that in writing, by the way, too, because I FOIA'd text messages related to Laquan McDonald and was denied. And then was able to read about some of his text messages related to Laquan McDonald in the Tribune. Mm-hmm. So, that's an example of, you know, him doing one thing. And they parse very closely. And not to get into total wonk land here, but, you know, I think they basically told me they had no text messages because, and the implication was because Rahm has a private cell phone. Mm-hmm. And so that's not city property. So he can send text messages to whomever he wants. But even if the people he's texting them to are paid by you and I and other taxpayers of Chicago. And so that they mince and play all these games.
Well, see, I give Mick credit for opening this frontier. Back when he was at the Reader, he got the idea of filing a Freedom of Information request for Rahm's calendar so we could see who Rahm was meeting with.
And,
actually, you started that with Daly and then carried it
and
over.
And Daly wouldn't give it, I ended up suing Daly and the city, and they eventually coughed up the record, so there was a little bit of precedent. And so, yeah, we keep asking
What that illustrated, really, it was like a cry of frustration on our part, because it was clear we didn't believe, speaking for myself, I didn't believe what the mayor was saying. Like, whatever the mayor would say or offer as a way of, policy justification, or even what the policy was. So to try to understand what was really going on, reporters, I give Mick credit, the first one that I know of started asking for who are you meeting with and what are your emails?
That's
and
a then great question.
Yeah, now the Tribune has taken it. I mean, I got to give them credit. They're obsessive about it. They're like always looking, filing for emails. And then, of course, then the issue becomes, it's not clear that Rahm or any politician is absolutely obligated to turn over every single email. And so, and then he can always claim, I missed this one or that one.
Right.
So when they turn over the emails, first of all, they redact a lot of the information.
Yeah,
that's
vaguely
interesting.
That seems to be their only tool in protecting that information.
That and not turning over the information to begin with.
Right,
like when they gave the Tribune those text messages that you're alluding to, we don't know if they gave them every single text message that Rahm texted from Cuba when he was in Cuba. We just know those are the text messages that they chose to share.
So they can do that. They can say, okay, we'll give you some texts. We'll give you these. We're not going to give you these.
They're obligated under their law to give it all up, but it's an honor system, level, unless you're going to go to court and do a lawsuit and through the process of discovery to get them to come.
Which is amazing to me, because the idea of investigative journalism has turned into a big part of you have to use the legal system. I mean, we saw with Laquan McDonald and the pressure put on to get that video released. You see with the text messages.
That was through a lawsuit.
Yeah, through a lawsuit. But it seems to me like politics and the way that journalists and politicians interact with each other in 2016 has changed. It's sort of arbitrated by the courts.
No, it's not just that. I mean, this goes beyond Rahm, but he's mastered it. By and large, it's communication at best through email. So, in the old days, you call up a press person, you'd have a conversation, it'd be some off the record, some on the record, they'd give you the official line, then they'd tell you off the record what's really going on. Nowadays, for me at best, I get an email response a week after my story is done. But for most reporters, I'm reading the paper, an email response from
they put everything in writing. And if people wonder why we send in so many FOIAs, there's no other way to get the information. You can't even get basic information. Most of the time they make you submit a FOIA.
Interesting. The day is gone where you could call the mayor's office and say, hey, I need a quote on, I want to know why this happened with the school district. They won't even talk to you about
that. Well, they may do that, but Ben's right. It'll be a canned statement. It'll be something that's so clinical and devoid.
There's no sort of like relationship with the spokesperson. Like, here's the deal, Mick.
Not really. I mean, some of them there are. You do have some off-the-record conversations or on background conversations, but if you want anything to put in your story, then it's going to be a canned talking point. And if you want any basic information, data, records, you have to go through FOIA. I mean, it used to be, I remember when I got started, you wanted information about a crime, you would call Police News Affairs and say, I heard there was a shooting on such and such a block, and they would give you the basic details. You can hardly get any of that anymore. You have to basically send in a FOIA for a police report and go through this whole huge process. And I think it's just a butt-covering, mechanism by the administration.
Let me ask you guys this as we're wrapping up here on time. You know, you mentioned, when you first started, and the ability to go to News Crime Affairs and be able to get that information, and we talked about the FOIA stuff here in 2016. Is it easier or is it harder to be a journalist covering Chicago politics today
than
when you guys both started?
Oh, well,
because the internet says, it's easier because there's so much more information. But is it easier?
Well, when you throw that in, I would say that it's probably easier. No, you know what? Let me strike that. It's harder today because in the old days, pretty much any of the budgets that you have on the internet. You could go get, there was something called the Municipal Reference Library. God, I'm really showing how old I am. And it was at City Hall.
You could go to an actual library, Ben? Wow.
All the documents there were there.
I thought Ron got rid of the libraries because everyone just uses Amazon.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember when he had
idea? Daly was the first to get rid of the Municipal Reference Library. Yeah. Ron was just perfecting it. So I think it's across the board more difficult to get something vaguely resembling the truth from City Hall than it has been from any administration before Daly. Byrne was easier to get the truth. Washington and Sawyer. So it's been all downhill since Gene Sawyer.
What do you think, Mick?
Yeah, there's more information out there and available, but the quality of it is variable. I mean, so you do have to work. You can get data online and stuff, but like, what does it mean? And to ask, you know, for any kind of context to find out how it was generated, where it came from, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, just basic, you know, who, what, where, when, why kinds of questions. It's harder because everyone is so buttoned up. Everyone is it's a constant political campaign.
You know, for both you guys, that's the question I ask a lot of guests that come in, artists and creative types and authors who talk about, you know, what it's like to live in this city. Or what does this city mean to them? For you guys covering the city, covering politics, and choosing to live your lives here in Chicago, you know, you read your stuff and, you know, most of the time you guys are down on what's happening in the city. what does Chicago mean to you, Ben, to you, Mick, as actual Chicago citizens? I mean, talk about your relationship to the city.
Well, I have a very complicated relationship with Chicago, particularly the people of Chicago. I'm usually mad at them one level or another. I've been pretty much mad at all my fellow Chicagoans since April when they reelected Rahm, and now they're moaning and groaning about it. So I would say I have sort of this split personality when it comes. On one level, I mean, this is where I decided to live. So I raised kids here, got married, bought a house, all that stuff. So there must be something here I like, but I'm usually in a perpetual state of mad at my fellow Chicagoans.
And that's why I read you, man.
Yeah, yeah. It comes across.
How about you, Mick?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Michigan. Chicago is the closest city, and so I grew up coming here a lot. But I am still, I go at this sort of mystified by this place on one level. Like, even though I've lived here for more than two decades, I don't understand why we keep electing shallow strongmen to lead us. I just don't get it. Like, why can't we do better? You know, so I'm perplexed by that and just fascinated by it too. And I just see Chicago as like a great urban experience with all of the heart and soul of this place I love. But all of the just, you know, messed up stuff that's going on, the crime, the racial segregation, let alone the political corruption. I don't quite understand it, which is what fascinates me. So it's like an insect to the light, man.
Yeah. Well, it's important to have you guys telling these stories because it seems like fewer and fewer places are investing in this kind of coverage. And that's a shame. The show's called First Tuesdays with Mick and Ben. It's a political talk show on stage the first Tuesday of every month at the Hideout in Chicago, 1354 West Waubonsia. It's the next one is Tuesday, February 2nd. You got Representative Ford. You got Chicago Alderman Roderick Sawyer. Mick Dumpke is an investigative reporter for the Sun-Times. Ben Jarofsky, columnist for The Reader. You guys got to come back. We got to continue the conversation. We didn't get to TIFFs.
Oh, gosh.
We didn't get to TIFFs. Maybe,
that's an hour right
maybe
there.
Maybe we can bump the next person to talk about TIFFs, okay?
Good to see you guys.
Thanks, Justin.